And welcome to AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I'm your host, Tim Capper, along with the Stark one again, John Stark.
Hey, everyone.
So what's up? Go to any concerts lately?
No, but how about some football?
Football! It is, you know, we've been talking about it all year, how it's all-star seasons. All-star season this year, and some of the games just really haven't you know, been up to snuff and how we expected them to be. But this week, dude, this seemed like the Arena Football League of old. Everything that you could get involved in these games this week happened, and they were close. They meant something. It didn't matter what your record was. It was just damn good football.
It was damn good football. That's for sure.
It's just so much action. Don't know when to start. How about this? Before we get to the game, one thing I knew I forgot to put on the schedule. I at least want to mention it and see what your thought is. John, what's your thought about Phil Bogle? That's pretty kick-ass. For anybody who doesn't know, Phil Bogle is actually leaving the Soul. He's going into a direct... I don't know what he's been called, but he's going into a director's position somewhere in NYC for the NFL. OMG, right?
I say congrats to that, Phil.
I mean, that's crazy. You know, basically from his Instagram, he goes, I've been a part of this Soul organization since 07. In that time, I have been a part of 3 world championships and an abundance of valuable memories and experiences. I've acquired family and friends that will last a lifetime. The memories of what we were able to achieve over the past 11 years are forever etched in my heart. So I think it's just a departure from Philadelphia, a director's position with the NFL office in NYC. It's cool, dude. I mean, we think of players, but you know, Bogle has made a name for himself, quite a name for himself. In the Arena League and stuff like that. Huh? And I'm sure it helps, you know, you're on the team where, you know, Jaws is your owner, but sometimes it's, And I'm sure it's about what he knew, but sometimes, as you know, it's about not necessarily who you know, but who you know, right?
Right, and it also helps to have a great personality like Phil does and such a positive attitude. I've had the pleasure of chatting with him a few times, and he's like a shining star. I don't know how else to say it. He's a great guy.
Yeah. So congrats to you, dude, and... all the best in the NFL, man. I mean, he's really the second person. Yeah, second person, I think, that I can think of off the top of my head, John, that has gone onto the office, some sort of the office associated with the NFL, you know, the one being David Baker, now being the president of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Bigger and better. Above and beyond. To infinity and beyond. So, but the games this week, heading back to the games, In general, was there any one, because we're talking about both years and we're talking about everything that happened, anything in particular between the two games that really stood out in your head this week?
Yes.
I know that's an open-ended question, but I mean, it's just to just see if there was anything in particular that really stuck out in your head.
Yeah, something did. One person's name, and that name would be Fred Obie.
Okay.
He had 2 interceptions in that Valor game, and he also recovered the basically block kick there. Mm-hmm. And one of his interceptions was
nice
literally
kick.
That's a great block kick. one of his interceptions was literally a game changer.
Uh-huh.
That reversed field, and the Valor were able to run out the clock. And for once, I'm a fan of that.
Yeah. So if Ben were here, the frat would like that.
Yes, he would.
And we miss you again, Ben.
Yeah, we do, buddy.
Seat's getting a little cold. My cat's now sleeping on it, but we can always hope you're not allergic to cats, Ben. I could always get one of those things and get the cat hair off of it. But
what about
for me.
What was a standout for you?
God, there's so much. To me, and this is not trying to be general, but the how original some of these onside kicks were this week. I mean,
yeah, that too.
Nuts. Some of the stuff you didn't expect, and it turned some of these games. It really did. I love to see that type of stuff. You know, we got field goal. We got to see field goals this week. I mean, we're seeing, you know, it's becoming so infrequent that we're seeing field goals kicked in the Arena League, and you basically have a game end on a field goal kick. So
yeah, we did.
But let's talk about the games in more detail. First, it started off on Saturday. The big matchup, Albany Baltimore Part 3 happened, and if Albany goes into this game leading by points, and so they are first place, the winner of this game could easily be in the driver's seat of who's going to host Arena Bowl. And Baltimore does come up on top by a score of 59-56. Wide receivers this week, John, were just monster across the board. Joe Hill is once again did what he did. Gets up to crazy eights, gets 80, is 88th consecutive game with a touchdown reception. Brandon Tompkins, 17 receptions, 159 and 3. And I think you were...
What?
Yeah, I think you were saying there was a particular stat about that 17, right?
Yeah, there was. And he came very close, to the all-time record,
yeah.
I think?
Yeah, he came close to the all-time record, which was set way back when by Dwayne Dixon back in 87 of 20 catches in a single game. And it was also done by Huey Whittaker back in 2008. But still, he was so damn close. But it's funny how the game changed in the last 3 minutes, basically. And you're thinking, oh, he's gonna possibly get to that record or get within one or within two. Didn't happen because the game changed completely. It just completely changed after Baltimore got that touchdown with 4:22 remaining to go up.
Right. Yeah, that was the Sims one-handed grab, wasn't it?
Nuts.
Yeah. Yes, I think it was, yeah.
By the way, and didn't we get 3 plays this week on ESPN's Top 10?
SportsCenter Top 10. Yeah. We had 2 from this game.
Yeah.
It was the Sims one-handed, and it was that amazing Mark Lewis. It's like behind the back. Oh, man. You have to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
That onside kick was fantastic.
Yeah. I'm very surprised the CBS Sports Network did not put that out. But if you go over, somebody actually did capture it. If you go to our Twitter account over at twitter.com/arenafan, you can see it. We did tweet it out. I mean, overall, this was arena football, one of the best arena football games at its best. You know, I'm not really the type of person. I don't know how you are, but I understand coming down to a field goal to win, to kick, seems sort of anticlimactic in a way when it comes to the game of arena football. But still, how it was done was just as interesting. To be able to come down there, waste the clock. You know, the game was tied, so the one-minute timing rules had no effect whatsoever. It played out like normal. The game just played out like normal. And sure enough, kick by Mark Lewis won the game.
It was a nail-biter.
Oh, yeah. And what's funny, it usually seems to be this way, especially for football, but Tommy Grady specifically, interception at the wrong time.
And it was the only one.
Well, for him. Remember, Hip did throw one too.
No, I meant, but when you're talking about Tommy Grady, it was the only one he threw. Right, yeah.
Yeah, late fourth quarter, wrong time to throw a pick. And they were driving to go ahead. It's funny. You go back into Tommy Grady's career, and you see how many late, game-changing, fourth quarter interceptions he's thrown. Just killer, dude, killer. But still, quarterbacks again had a monster week. Grady himself, you know, 19 to 28, 275, 7-1. Randy Hippard, who was named the offensive player of the week, 29 of 37, 278-1. It was a game that we had hoped and it lived up to its hype. I think so.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. So what? So these two teams played twice this week. You know, twice in the past 2 weeks in the same location. So what? Doesn't matter. Now, do you think it's that itself was the turning point? the Grady thing, because it basically turned, I think it was after the 44-yard pass to Tompkins with 9:11 left, then Sims gets his touchdown with 4:22. Was that would you call that the turning point, or it was at the end it was, you know, clock management by what Baltimore needed to do in order to get that win, because that was so close. Oh, can you think of what it'd be like if these two teams meet for Arena Bowl?
Oh,
wow. I think I'm gonna go more on the side of the clock. I'm gonna agree with the clock management on this. Mm-hmm. The game was so close. So close since before the half. It, you know, there was not really a definite lead there.
No, there were after halftime there were four ties for the second half. So yeah, it was a great game. The 8,700 and change that were there got to see a great game. Great game. And P.O. was in the house. Pat O'Hare was in the house. Decided to come up from Tennessee. Sure, I'll call some arena football. Why not? It's good seeing P.O. in the house. Second game of the week. The winless Washington Valor go into Philadelphia to go up against the two-time Arena Bowl champ to try to get their first win of the year, get off the snide, and finally get Coach Benji his first win. And we're talking about plays from the games themselves, John, and you look at this one. You had one that made the top 10 also on SportsCenter.
Right, yeah. Jared Dangerfield, one of the Valor wide receivers, went over the boards, I think, into Philly's bench and held on to the ball. Great, great reception.
So it was tough, too. I mean, there would have been no way to challenge that play. I think even if they'd wanted to, there's no way they could have challenged that play. No matter what, no matter how much the Sol bench was trying to say, no, we didn't catch it.
He caught it.
As far as we're concerned, he caught it. Now, I think another interesting twist to this game was Shane Austin. Shane Austin gets signed by the Sol last week, and he starts for the Sol this week. We've been asking ourselves, and so have many in the chat room, chat boards, why didn't McGee play? Now, if you were Coach Dozell, John, what would you think that it would have been his reasoning to start Shane Austin compared to having McGee play, who's shown some signs of promise, but why start him over the other two quarterbacks that they have on the roster?
The first thing that would come to my mind is because Austin had a fresh feel for the Valor offense since he had just recently played on that side of the ball, mm-hmm. or what have you. That's my feeling. What about you?
I think it also had to go with experience. You know, even though Shane really did not play well in his last game with the Valor, where he was pulled, and then he was basically, you know, released or benched or whatever you want to call it. Shane had the experience, and I guess he was able to grasp Coach Dozell's playbook quick enough where they felt that it was, you know, that he would be able to start and be able to hopefully lead the team to a win. But as we saw, even with Arvell Nelson, John, not having as large of a week as he did the week prior, even though he did have six total touchdowns.
Yes, he did.
On the day. Four passing, two rushing. They were able to pull it out. Now, I know you are a Valor fan. I want to know what was your thought on how this win finally came to be. What's your thought as a Valor fan?
It's kind of hard to put my thoughts together because I've you know, I was waiting for,
and yes, if you're, anybody's
time.
Asking, yes, John did watch the game.
Right, I did. I watched the entire game, and I was smiling from ear to ear in the last 45 seconds. I remember messaging you and mm-hmm. Ben both almost upset that the Valor were about to lose because at one point they threw the ball instead of running it, and we know how that happens in other important games.
Yep.
So I was freaking out a bit, and I was absolutely excited when, like I said to you earlier, Fred Obie came up with that game-changing interception there near the end of the game when Philly was about to score again to seal Washington's fate.
That's, yeah. But it's good. I mean, it can be it can be positive, I think, especially with the league this year. I'm still standing by my thing that I said earlier, that I don't think any teams can win more than 8 games. So it can be very... I'm wondering. It makes me wonder if I'm going to be dead on about this. Arvid Nelson has said he was only 17-27, 214, 4-1. But as I said before, he had 6 rushes for 15 yards and two tutties.
And you know, sorry not to cut you short, but I noticed one other thing about Nelson this week as far as stats go is that they spread the ball around quite a bit.
They did. Yeah, six total receivers.
As opposed to normally 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Shane Austin, 18-33, 302, 6-2. Those two interceptions, and this is Shane Austin. Shane, you know, less the monster year when they went when they only lost 1 game and went to the Arena Bowl, but those two interceptions did come back to bite the soul in the butt, especially that last one. But what I think is funny, by the way, John, is that no matter who seems to be starting for the Philadelphia Soul, Darius Prince seems to be around the ball quite a bit. It's just like he doesn't matter who's under center, they're gelling quite well.
Oh, he's definitely a natural talent without a doubt. Rookie of the year, maybe. You know, he's pulling away with that one.
Mm-hmm. I remember most people forget that. Would he still be considered a rookie since he played in the playoffs? I'm trying to remember. He only played 1 game. That was in the playoffs, right?
Right. And that might have... I think he did just only come in for the Arena Bowl.
Let me check since we're talking here. I can check real quickly. I mean, it seems that with Darius Reynolds has seemed... It's funny to say this. Considering how monster of a player Darius Reynolds is, it just seems that he's become an afterthought. And maybe it has to do with the change in quarterbacks. It's not just not... You understand what I'm saying?
I do.
Because there just seems so much turnaround when it comes to, you know, who's going to start at fullback for them, who's going to start at quarterback for them. You know, it's hard as hell trying to pick a fullback on Arena Fantasy Pick'em, a quick
pick. You're right about that.
It's impossible. It's impossible. Let me see here. Darius Prince is considered a rookie. Dude, this is tough. Because you got him and Malachi Jones?
Yeah.
Dude.
That's going to be a close one. I hope they both get something at the end of the year.
See, the thing is, when you throw Joe Hills into the mix, you got Offensive Player of the Year. One of them has to get Offensive Player of the Year. The other one has to get Rookie of the Year. And something that we need to start talking about is MVP.
That too.
Do you give it to a wide receiver or a quarterback this year? Because really, the only quarterback that you could really give this to, well, you could give it to Grady or you could give it to the defending defending league MVP.
Well, we do have
Randy Hippard.
A few more games left in the regular season.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be tough. I remember when I was trying to come up with it was almost a given who I wanted to choose. And this year it's a little bit tougher.
I think you're right.
Considering all-star seasons and whatnot. And,
sure. Going to have to do a little bit of comparison.
Mm-hmm. Now, the leading receiver for DC was only 67 yards, and that went to Josh Reese. Darius Prince, 8 receptions, 146 and 4. After that was Darius Reynolds, four receptions, 80 yards, 1 TD. Jeremy Richardson showed again, monster. He seems to be back, but he didn't score a touchdown. He had 33 yards rushing. I think he got most of them on one rush, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there was a rumble.
And also, too, the kicking was spot on. Kicking was spot on. Another block kick. Right near the end of the game.
Yep.
Which could have been killer. So, either way, great games. Great games this week. It's arena football at its best. It's what we hope to see when it comes to arena football. The other thing that came across the wire, and I thought that was very interesting, because we're going to talk about more about the games in a couple minutes, because we got a couple of beefs I want to talk about. 11-year vet and class of 2012 Arena Football League Hall of Fame member. I don't know how to respond, I'll explain why. But Cleavan Thomas, dude, was picked up by the Baltimore Brigade. And nobody can tell me that having Coach Omar Smith as their head coach did not have anything to do with it to get him to come out of retirement. Because the last time he played was back in 2016 for the LA Kiss.
It was a few years ago.
What's your thought on that? Now, obviously, the money's a little bit different in the Arena League this year.
Sure. I noticed that Thomas also has quite a few records where he's tied for third and second place. So I think maybe he saw, like you said, a little bit of the money and a little bit of a chance to maybe break some of those records and hold his own place there without being tied. I mean, he's got too many accolades to list on one show. He's a four-time Arena Bowl champ and multiple first arena. I could go on. I'm not going to. I think that it's a great move by Baltimore. I think they're trying to find maybe a missing piece to their defense to try and, I'm not going to say mirror Albany, but Albany's defense still seems to be the number one defense in the league.
Yeah.
And I think Baltimore recognizes they need that to have a chance to win the championship.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, it is what it is. You know, it's not just a one game thing where you could call them a ringer. I mean, these teams are so evenly matched this year that I can give Coach a mulligan on this one. I mean, he was available, and come on, as I said, Coach Smith being there, I think was one of the factors for him to come and play for the Brigade. Now, for a lot of you are questioning what I said before about the Hall of Fame thing, and yes, it is true that he was named to the class of 2012, but officially, John, you know, he really is not a. It's true, not true. I want to be careful in how I say this. He is a Hall of Famer as he was voted in, but he hasn't been inducted into the Hall of Fame. Does that make sense how I put that, John?
Yeah, it does.
And just in case, why am I saying this? Is that based on the rules that are set forth by the Arena Football League and at least the last time that we had a class, that you have to be inactive, and I think it's for 3 years. You have to be inactive for 3 years, John, in order to actually be eligible to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. The time that he was, I think he was still playing, and then he came back, and he came back again. He's come back with the Kiss, and now he came back with the Baltimore Brigade. So
yeah, roughly 2 years.
Yeah. So now he will have to wait at least, depending on how long he plays, at least till 2021 before he can officially be inducted into the Hall of Fame. Almost 10 years from when he was voted in.
It's unusual.
Just a touch, because usually you don't find somebody who would. You think that they would already be in, and they come out of retirement, and it's just weird. I guess it's one of those fun little quirks within the Arena Football League that these guys are still able to play like this. So, I mean, either way, it'll be interesting to see how much of an impact that he makes. Will age be a factor? Is he in shape? I think that's all questions that Brigade fans, I think, really need to ask. And I'm sure fans across the Arena Football League who know him specifically will be asking either way. Because, again, you don't think of this. You don't think of a guy coming in after you know, being out of the game for two years, such a great career, future Hall of Famer. So, I guess.
And how old is he? Is he close to TT's
age?
He's born in 70.
I think he was born in 79.
So that's got to make him almost 40. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. So, another thing that I find out, because I've been asking around, and we know what week we are in now, John. You know, we're coming up to week 10.
We are. Yep.
And the whole reason why we got the season going and the reason why we are playing this current season is because the league and the players union were able to come to an agreement on a new collective bargaining agreement. And as of yet, we have not seen or heard a thing when it comes to seeing an actual physical copy. Because I'm sure there are many people, including yourself, John, who would love to be able to see this, see what the hell's going on. I'd love to see the intricacies on this new CBA.
I would as well. Yeah.
So I put out some feelers to try to find out what's going on. And guess what I found out?
That didn't sound good. What'd you find out?
It is still stuck in legal limbo. For those who you don't know, when it comes to agreements between a union and its workers, that there is certain terminology and wording that is that goes into the agreement itself that has to be agreed upon. Even though they've agreed upon the essence of the agreement, you still have to write it up with all the legalese. Well, it's they're still arguing on how the wording, some of the wording needs to go and how it's going to be read in the new CBA. So I have been told that it is very possible that it may go to the end of the season, if not longer, before we actually see a physical copy of the new collective agreement, which I think is kind of ironic.
It is, and a little disappointing.
I'm curious to know. I don't know if they'll go through arbitration for the wording and stuff like that. I'm just curious to know, is it a petty thing when it comes to the difference between the word if and or? You know, that type of thing? Or is it legally a word that seems so, that doesn't fit there, that they think it does, and whichever side is arguing for or against it? You know, we were lucky enough to be able to put this behind us, but it makes me wonder how much of the language of the document or that certain section changes with one word. Is it a matter of who loses? Is the PU or the league afraid of losing something in particular, giving up something based off of one word? Because you're not a union guy, right? You're not in a union.
Correct.
I am, and I've been through strikes too, and I know there is legalese, but not to this extent. Well, how many were what? It was signed in April, just before.
Yeah, it was
and
being
coming up on mid to late June.
Right, it's been 10 weeks.
So.
Maybe 11, but yeah.
Yeah, it would be, yeah. Just come on, guys. Get it together. Let's see what's going on. Make nice. If two other people from two other countries can get together for the first time, I'll leave it at that. So can get along, so can you. So, all right. Before we head to our Q&A, we'd hope to have a guest this week, but it looks like it fell through. We do apologize. We'll reach out to this person again to try to get him on. A little bit of a rant. You know, we've been talking all year about how we hate how the rules were changed for the warning of 1 minute. Everything with under that basically the whole paragraph is taken out of the rule book and completely changed. And last week, John, you and I made our suggestions on how we think that it could be resolved, which we think would make everything fair. But most of the time, John, it has to do with stuff that's within the second half, right? Not the first half.
Right.
Now, it just so happened that this was the first half. And it just so happened to be the Philadelphia-Washington game. Now, I understand that Washington was trying to run out the clock so that they could make sure that they were the last to score. And they would get the double duty because they would get the ball out of this, you know, to come out of the second half. But what I don't get is this. It just reinforced my hate, John, for the kneeling down being able to be allowed this year. Because to see DC drive down, go under 1 minute, and then kneel it, not once, not twice, but it's just so that they can run as much clock as possible. And then what totally blows my mind, I don't know if you noticed this, it's like you can't count. Who kneels on third and two, which is merely a third and
oh,
goal.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Third and
I
goal know. To create a fourth down situation?
From 15 yards out, I think it was also.
No, they weren't that. No, they were closer.
Okay.
No, they were within 5 yards.
Oh, okay.
It was a minimum. It was a maximum 5 yards. I think it was third and two. So I think it was from the 2 yard line. So they kneel down, so it been from the three or something. Who does this? You basically backed yourself they backed themselves into a corner where if you try on third down and you don't get in, okay, that I can understand. But then on fourth down, you kneel to go fourth down. I am wondering if somebody forgot what down it was.
That's a good possibility, because as I was watching that game and seeing exactly what you're talking about, I was questioning it and kind of frustrated.
I just hate the kneel down. Oh, to a passion. There's no place for the kneel down in the Arena League. None whatsoever. It's just so frustrating. Again, I have no problem with him getting rid of the rules in the first half, but doing this, something still has to be done. They were lucky to win, because it's funny, they didn't do anything in the, you know, getting the ball coming out of the second half at all. So they went 0-2 and they still won by the skin of their teeth. So,
well, they played a good second half.
I mean, when you look at the two differences, yes, there's two different sets of rules when it comes to how you play the end of the first half, and you almost play the second half the exact same way, just based on what the score is. Other than what you saw, I mean, what's your take? I mean, are they equal, or is it just, again, that where you should not, again, kneeling should not really be allowed, and that's just showing another flaw in this rule. I mean, they're playing strategically. I get it.
Right. So I wouldn't necessarily say it should not be allowed, but when it comes to strategy, you know, as a fan, you can only take so much of seeing the same thing that you feel does not belong there. Sort of how earlier in the season, you, Ben, and I were all talking about these onside kicks are just horrendous over and over. And as the season's gone on, we've started to see onside kicks that look better and that are working out for the teams that are executing them.
Yeah, and they've worked out well.
Right.
Quite well. So don't forget, you can get a hold of us here at AFL Tonight in multiple ways. You can get a hold of us via Twitter, Facebook. We're on Instagram. It's @ArenaFan. We do have the YouTube page that I keep forgetting to mention. It's ArenaFan Online. And do not forget that you can head over to our SoundCloud account, listen to at least a minimum of the last 2 weeks to a maximum of three. But other than that, you can also head over to go to iTunes or to Google Play Music, and you can listen to the entire history, 200 plus episodes that are currently available on the net. And if there are any questions, comments, concerns, you can reach us over at tim.capper@arenafan.com, and I will make sure that... any questions, I will make sure that you guys get them. Speaking of questions, John, we have some. Thank you guys for sending them to us. We do appreciate you taking part in the show. My question to us from Sean Johnson. My question for the Troika this week. Well, we're deuce this week, unfortunately. Is it me, or has kicking been fantastic all year? We've seen so many games, like the Baltimore-Albany game, where both kickers were 8-for-8. I find that extra points are close to automatic this year. Even the onside kicks were working well this weekend with 4 recovered. Is it just that we have 4 teams and all-star kickers this year? Are the league-wide kicking stats above normal years? Well, we talked about the kicking before. I think kicking is another big strategy. And when you have Mark Lewis, who is the guru, you break it out when you can, right, John?
No question.
And when you look at the kicking really, I don't think has really changed. You know, field goals are still where they are, probably in the lowest levels in league history. But it's just because the game has evolved when it comes to fourth downs. But I don't have the all the full stats in front of me, but I mean, it's kicking really hasn't changed. You know, the extra points are basically automatic, but the thing is, they're used to it. This is still 9-foot wide, you know, extra point on the uprights. So,
well, here's something I just looked up real quick.
Yeah.
Last year for Tampa Bay, Mark Lewis only had 1 field goal attempt, and it looks like that was missed. Made. He did make that. And this year he's had 4 field goals with Baltimore already. So they are utilizing his abilities. Looking farther back at Lewis's history, he's attempted a lot more. So I do think that field goals have gone down over the last 4 or 5 years.
Oh, that's a given.
No,
I completely agree with that. That's a given. When it comes to kicking has completely changed. You know, kicking has completely changed. Let me see here. Trying to find, when it comes to kicking, points scored kicking. Last year alone, there were 7 field goals made. 7. So,
not a whole lot.
No, it's gone down quite a bit. Philadelphia had by far the most extra points, but it was just because of record scoring. mean, they had 117 touchdowns last year. But overall, it's, you know, to me, kicking's the same, except for field goals, which hasn't really changed the past couple of seasons. So, but that's funny you mentioned that about Mark Lewis. That's a good stat, actually. Good catch. Good, bad, ugly from Sean. Let me see if we have the other question came to us from Michael Felcher. And his question is, I said again before we get to good, bad, ugly. He says a great podcast. Thanks. I'm a Philadelphia Soul fan who listens weekly. I hate the off season because I miss the podcast. Well, that's nice to hear.
Thank you.
Yeah. His question is, do you think we will ever see another arena football video game? We haven't had one since PlayStation 2 games. My favorite being Arena Football Road to Glory. Also, do you and I ever play the games? He plays it in the off season as his AFL fix. That's cool. I think if they ever went the route, John, I think they would go with, especially with today's technology, they would go the app version. Because, I mean, you can still get Madden on your phone. It's not the same,
right? Yeah.
As the console version, but it's still the Madden. It's still Madden.
They would have a larger audience.
Yeah, I think so. Now, it depends on what they would want to do. I'm sure it would take a little while for the in order to make the game, in order to get everything, all the coding, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, a good example of a game that nobody really expected was this past year. Last year, the CFL came out with their own type of mini game. It was more geared to the younger crowd, but I get that. But it's something that they were able to. It was the first ever officially, licensed CFL product. But I mean, the Arena League could do it. I don't know how much of the quirks you could get into the game. I mean, the question is, do you make the game similar to, Kurt Warner's Arena Football? Or do you make it like the EA game? Because, Kurt Warner was basically NBA Jam on steroids, played on a football field. Now, did you have any of the games?
No, and see, my thing is with older games, specifically 3D games, I try not to go back and play them because I end up getting disappointed. But for instance, if I go back and I play Tecmo Bowl, I still have the time of my life.
Yeah.
But it's just the PlayStation 1 graphics, that 32-bit stuff, it's too weird looking for me. Yeah. I don't enjoy it. There's no nostalgia there, even though I think there's going to be.
It was a different game, though. I mean, I picked up the original Arena Football game. I remember when it came out. I didn't pick up the... Did I pick up Road to Glory? I didn't pick up the second one. That's the one that included all the AF2 teams. Because I think the problem was that they switched... Didn't they switch platforms?
They did, but I'm not sure what that Switch was to. I do know they were on PS2.
Yeah. I still have both of my originals. Still have my, I really don't, I'm not much of a gamer anymore, but I do still have both of the games. It's just, a bit of nostalgia. I mean, you can find them on eBay for pennies on what we got them. I got mine the first week when I was able to, when it first came, was released here in Canada. So, it's just, I think it's just nostalgia. I mean, you go back and you look at the game that was never released, the one on the Jaguar system. I mean, it's somewhat similar to the game, I think, for the Kurt Warner game. But, okay. Yeah. If you don't know what we're talking about, we actually have some information on the Jaguar game over on our history page. So thanks for the question, Michael. As far as good, bad, ugly, you head back to Sean because Sean wanted to chime in this week also on his GB, on the GBUs. Start with him. My great of the week is the 21 points in the third. That's right. The third quarter for the Washington Valor. Yeah. First time in franchise history, John, that they actually score over 14 points.
Hell yeah.
In the first time in 22 franchise games. It goes, and a win and a clutch block kick and interception. Who is this team? Did the Valor sneak in Alexander Ovechkin under center and in a Shane Austin jersey? No, I don't think so. I don't.
No.
No. If it would have been, I don't remember hearing Shane Austin call stuff out in Russian. So it'd be like, ready, set, borscht, yet, hut. That was really bad.
But I'm entertaining,
leaving it in. What was your good for? See, that could be my bad. Well, what's your good?
My good. There's a lot of things to pick from, mm-hmm. but the thing that I'm going to say is that the attendance looked good for both games this weekend.
Yeah, both just a shade. Albany just a shade over 9, and Philly a shade over under 9.5, I think it was.
Yeah, right around the 9 mark both, yeah. So that was a good.
For me, my good is going to be the overall gameplay this week. I mean, it was nice to have two great games that you stayed, no matter who broadcasted the game, that you were able to enjoy the games either way because the games were close. It didn't necessarily mean that you had to listen to the play-by-play or the banter coming from the guys that were doing it. You were able to enjoy the game, enjoy the games. Who's your bad? Or what's your bad?
Who is what is... My bad is bad! And that is... I've talked about him quite a few times tonight. Fred Obi, 2 interceptions. Great block kick. Well, it was more like a recovery, but yeah. It was still completely necessary. And this was his most active game of the season. I think he was either reassigned or on the IR for a little bit. He played a few games for Washington. It looked like the beginning of the season, very quiet. So it was great to see a necessary component of the game on the field.
Yeah. My bad is also a bad. It goes to the GOAT, Mark Lewis, man. Oh, makes the game of kicking fun. It just throws a huge wrench into the return game because you don't know what he's going to do. You think he's going to do one thing, like, whoop, decided to do another thing. And to go off the back, basically his back foot like he did like that, and nobody touched the ball for 10 yards. Nobody. It's like everybody, he just knew exactly where to kick it. So I love it. So
that was great.
That was a beaut. For Sean, his is a bad also. And it goes again, Mark Lewis for his crew. I love how he puts it. This is perfect. Crazy dance moves disguised as an onside kick. He goes, oh, it was also bad of him to nail the game winner. Well, we'll forgive you, Sean. We'll give you a 2-for-1.
Yeah, there we go.
My ugly. It was so tough to find an ugly. Same thing as week before. I think for me would be the blatant in-studio broadcasting crew for MSN this week. When I first turned the game on, I thought it was my speakers and stuff like that. But then I saw, it was just me. It might have been just me, but I could swear that the audio sync was off slightly. Maybe that might have been just Facebook or how I was streaming it.
I think it was a little off.
Yeah, but it was, I know that Philadelphia had their own home broadcast crew. It just didn't do anything for me. I mean, sometimes you can, with some sports on, you can tell, I know like Ari Wolf, he's done some tennis from in the studio, but they're able to mix it in such a way where you don't sound like you're actually in a room. They're able to bring in the noise and stuff like that from the arena and stuff like that. So, what's your, ugly? I'll go Sean's ugly. Sean's ugly is, giving up 2 onside kick recoveries, almost costing the Valor a needed win. Inexcusable. And you're ugly, sir. I did it again. Yeah,
it's all good. It's almost expected. It's a little treat. I am ugly with you, Tim. Mine goes for the broadcast for MSN as well. It was a little janky. I'll say that. Let's call it a not so ugly, but it's still an ugly. I guess that I get it. The Capitals won the Stanley Cup championship, and it's been absolutely madness for Monumental Sports and NBC Sports, Washington, and all of them. So I understand it. But we have some issues, like you were saying, on the Monumental broadcast that are just kind of like plaguing them, so to speak, where it's the same thing kind of over and over. We had some name mispronunciations again that I don't know, that sort of thing as a fan just gets to me, but I guess we could have a worse ugly.
Yeah, we could. And such a week of great football. Yeah, we could have some. We could have it worse. It could, yeah, that's for sure. It really could be worse.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Who are we to complain?
Yeah. Again, thanks to everybody for chiming in. Go ahead and send us an email if you do, so you can send it to us by Wednesdays, either on our social media accounts, to me directly on Facebook if we're friends, you can send it on the Arena Fan Facebook page too, or send it to me in an email at tim.capper@arenafan.com. For the first time, we have a doubleheader on CBS, 2-day doubleheader. It is actually nice to see. It's going to be interesting. I think PO is doing one game. I think you got the regular crew who's going to be doing doing one of the games too. I don't know who's doing what yet. I think the Philly Albany game will go to Ari and Seth, I think. But the first game is on Friday, John. Battle of the what is the highway? I should know this. I would say war on I-4, but it's not. What is this? Beltway. Battle of the Beltway.
It is the Battle of the Beltway.
Yeah. Valor coming off their first win of the year, playing the first place Baltimore Brigade. In this game, John, the Baltimore Brigade are favored by 13.5 points, according to Five Dimes. And the over-under is listed at 57. What's your thoughts?
I don't argue too much with that. Baltimore's been pretty filthy at home this season, mm-hmm. against every team. So I think that we may end up seeing a Baltimore win once again.
Now, the two seasons that these two teams have been playing, John, no team has ever swept a series. So far, Baltimore has won both matchups this season. What we also tend to forget, too, John, is that the last time that these two teams met, Baltimore only won by a single point.
That's like so many other Valor matchups.
Mm-hmm. But do you think that the change in with Shane Austin, if he can avoid the interceptions, can they make this the same type of game that they played for Philadelphia? Now, mind you, Philadelphia is not the same team. Sorry, Arvell Nelson. Arvell Nelson, what do you think? I mean, he's had one good game, technically, one bad game, technically, but he's been consistent in how many touchdowns that he's been credited for. Do you see any chance that DC can win their second straight?
I do. I see the chances there being where they would have to watch a few things, mm-hmm. and some of those being not committing too many penalties and making safe passing decisions, trying to limit the interceptions.
Okay.
Yeah, there's been a couple games, and I think the one I'm thinking of is the one you referred to, and is that 42-41 win against Washington.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know what it was specifically, but there was one game-changing play there that Washington kind of botched, and there we see the one-point difference. I just don't remember what it was.
Oh, was it a mixed extra point?
It must have been. I think that was the game that Ben and I might have been at. And yes, it was. And he and I said they should have gone for two earlier on at the end of the first.
Oh, that was. That's right. They missed the field to the extra point on their very first touchdown.
Yep.
That's what it was.
So if the Valor can not make those types of mistakes, I think they have a good chance of winning.
I think the over-under is a
knock
little,
on wood.
I think the over-under is a little high.
Okay.
I think the over-under is a little bit high. 97. I mean, but I guess just, you know, scoring is up slightly over the past couple of weeks. So that game is on Friday at 7 p.m. on the CBS Sports Network. And also on Saturday, 6 p.m., CBS Sports Network also, Philadelphia, Albany. It's the first time Philadelphia returns to Albany since the inaugural game for the Empire back in April. You know, these teams haven't played in a month. About a month, give or take about a month. This is a different Philadelphia team. You know, Albany already gave Philadelphia their first loss of the year, and this is where Shane Austin is under center. And if I'm not mistaken, Albany's already played. Have they already played Shane Austin? I'm trying to remember. When would they have played? Here we can go. Shane Austin, Philadelphia. Here we go. Off the top of your head, do you remember?
John? I'm actually doing the same thing.
Oh, are you? Yeah. Yeah, week seven. Yeah, he was 15 to 27, only two tutties and two picks. So they've played him once already this year. So that's when he was with the Valor.
Okay. I think that was that at Washington?
I think so. I know, maybe. At Albany.
Okay. Albany.
So, you know, it's basically a return trip for Shane, just under wearing different colors. Now, the line for this game, set up by Five Dimes, currently has Albany favored by 7, with the over-under of 91.5. Is Philadelphia, in your opinion, a 500 team for the rest of the year? I mean, that's currently what they are. Because Albany's in there, obviously, to try to get a revenge factor for what happened at the very first game of the year. What's your thoughts?
You know, it's going to depend on a lot of factors, obviously. And I think that until we see Dan Rodabaugh come back at quarterback, they may stay a 500 team, which is the rest of the regular season. Okay. Yeah. I think it's going to be dependent on who they play. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the scores are so close that one mistake, one interception does change the game, and you don't have enough time to come back.
Right.
Especially with those 1 minute rules.
Yeah. No, that's true. My thought is I'm looking at this. I think Albany has the stronger team going into this one. Coach Dozell will have to do a lot to make sure that they stay within this game. Again, it's, you know, if we can have two great games this week, I'll be happy about that. But I think Albany's smarting a little bit, and considering how they lost the game last week, that I wouldn't be surprised to see Tommy Grady throw for 8 touchdowns and no interceptions.
Sure. I mean, they are both coming off of losses. Mm-hmm.
So, and really both by interceptions too. Really losses by interceptions. So,
ouch.
And obviously Albany needs to keep pace with Baltimore, because obviously, well, you know, this is one thing we have to talk about coming up. You know, sure, you can finish 1-2, but you would have these particular options. If you finish 1-2, you have the option of when you get your home game for the playoffs.
Yeah, first week or second week.
Yeah, exactly, which could be huge. Do you got a lot of variables? Oh man, I just thought about that. There are a lot of variables with that. It all come down to that first week, if you win or don't. So, by the way, another quick note too for anybody who happened to mention that, notice that Aaron Rodgers, former superstar, I mean, amazing player in the Arena Football League, I think he played at Portland, if I remember correctly. He is back in the CFL after a short stint in the playing for the Niners and getting hurt in, I think, training camp. But he's back playing football. So if you happen to watch, remember CFL does start this week, and watch the Calgary game, if you're able to watch the things on ESPN. But to watch another AFL alum do his stuff. So I'm looking forward to the week, John. I mean, we're winding down the regular season, and it's again, a lot of variables now. I mean, people are saying, Tim, you're full of it. No, there's still a lot to be done, no matter how the playoffs are run this year. Still want to have that momentum going into the playoffs. We've seen many a team go into the playoffs on a losing streak and just do nothing. So, should be cool. Should be a great week. So, anyway,
last week's got me excited for this week.
Yeah. You're not covering any games this week?
Not in person. No, I'll do some coverage on Friday night's Valor game.
Okay. So, should be a good week. Enjoy it. Any comments or questions, head over to the Arena Fan message boards and talk with your fellow fans. So enjoy the week. So everybody here at AFL Tonight, for John, I'm Tim. Watch the rebounds out the net.